Welcome to Betrayal Trauma Recovery. This is Anne. I woke up to an amazing text this morning from Coach Lara. We had planned to do a podcast and I slept in a little, so I'm so glad she texted me. And here we are. Before I start my conversation with Coach Lara, those of you who are members of Betrayal Trauma Recovery Group know that Lara is one of the coaches. In addition to Lara, every single one of our coaches has a session with Betrayal Trauma Recovery Group. It is live and online every day. There are several sessions every day on most days, and we're adding a new session soon. So please check the schedule. And when you join, you can talk to Coach Lara and all of our other coaches unlimited amount of times. So please check that out. You can see the schedule at btr.org. So good morning, Lara. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Anne.
Okay, so we were just going to talk, Lara and I, because we're friends, and we thought just a natural conversation would be good. Lara has been through a major life change since she was last on the podcast. It was work-related. Lara, can you share what's happened in your life lately?
Sure. Last February 2019, I had what I now refer to as my third and final D-Day in my relationship with my husband. Witnessed some behaviors that when I confronted him, it became evident to me that he had relapsed quite a time before. So basically, I was finding out again that he was in his addiction and lying for the 3 years prior. Being that I had some bottom line boundaries for myself, which was that I would not be in a relationship with an addict not pursuing recovery, and that I would not be kept in the dark again about my reality. And after talking to him through this, it became evident that it was now time for me to say we couldn't continue. We had been, as many people who know me know, we had been in recovery for 10 years post my initial D-Day, and I was comfortable calling it quits at this point. So since August of last year, I've been legally separated and we are heading for divorce. It's not a therapeutic separation.
So for women who just started listening to the podcast, let's talk about a couple terms you brought up. Can you define D-Day for us?
Yes, that's shorthand way of saying like day of discovery. Usually we use that term to describe the very first day something was discovered. I tend to use it, and I don't know, maybe other coaches do as well, for any discovery that has kind of redefined my reality. The original discovery is when I first discovered his porn use. Last February was when I realized he had returned to using it.
So in your experience, you had about three major D-Days?
Yes.
This last one was the third. Is that common with your clients that they have these multiple D-Days?
Yeah. I've talked to many women who, like myself, before I had some of the education that I have now, think that their relationships are on a path to healing. And some relationships are on a path to healing. But until we know the signs and learn to trust our gut and really pay attention to the red flags, we can put faith in the fact that our spouses are on the right road, or that good start is going to last. And so I've heard many women say, you know, I knew about this, I found out about this, and I thought X, Y, and Z. I thought we were on the road to recovery. I thought he was doing well. Things seemed to be better. And then I discovered this. I don't think it's unusual at all.
No, it's not. And I also don't espouse the opinion that some people have that in your gut, deep in your soul, you know. I do believe that you can pick up on little signs that something isn't right. But I don't think women are in denial. I think that's a form of victim blaming. I don't think that they always know, and like their gut is screaming out to them, telling them he's not in recovery, this isn't a safe situation, and they're like blindly just moving forward. I do think that there are instances where a woman genuinely doesn't know. She's not having those like internal little red flags going off. Many women have experienced that. I do also think that the better we get at recognizing abuse and the better that we get at being in tune with our gut, the better detector we're going to have. But that doesn't mean that we're never going to be tricked again, because our detector is never going to be perfect. I don't want to like freak women out. I just mean, give yourself some grace. It's okay. Like, it's not your fault. They are at fault. And if you're like a good, upstanding, happy, cheerful person, it's not hard for you to like take someone's word for it, right? Because that's how people are. Do you want to expound on that a little bit? Because I've heard so many people say, well, she was just in denial, or her gut knew and she wasn't in touch with herself or whatever, which I do think is true. A lot of us are like, oh man, you know, now that I'm out of it, I can see that. But when you're in it, it's really hard to like feel that out.
I could expound on this for days. I have a lot of sympathy for the women that I work with because I've been in the same boat, and you're absolutely right. I find that we are put kind of in a position where no matter what we do, somebody can criticize it. I wanted my marriage to make it. I wanted to give recovery a chance. I don't have any regrets. I know that to have given my marriage a chance, I was eventually, you know, I had to learn the boundaries. I had to learn to recognize red flag. I had to learn to trust my gut. And at the same time, if it's going to work, there's going to come a day when I have to make myself vulnerable again to say, okay, I'm done some work. I'm willing to extend my trust again, knowing I'm not stupid, knowing that that trust could be betrayed again. But if I'm not willing to one day take that risk again, I may as well call it quits in the beginning. I remember one professional that I was hoping to partner with as a coach saying, you knew. I knew when I walked down the aisle. And I was like, no, I didn't know. And he said, no, you knew. And yeah, I knew right then and there I couldn't partner with him. I couldn't work with women and be telling them one thing while he was telling their husband something else. That doesn't work well. When those two get back home together, there's no way I knew. I don't know how people working with men with addiction, or women for that matter, can say that, because they know how successful they are in their deceptiveness. So how can I know what is deliberately and systematically being kept from me?
This is why we created BTR. Because these same professionals that you're talking about, they're like, yeah, he's lied. They'll like admit that, give you that. But then they believe them about other things that are lies.
Right. And I get in trouble, so to speak, with those same professionals after I've been accused by that person of knowing and marrying anyway. Now I'm being accused of not trusting, not forgiving. Why am I assuming there's a lie? And I'm left confused and thinking nothing I can do is right.
It's also just flat out not logical.
Right. It's not.
They're talking out of both sides of their mouth, and it literally makes no sense. So you keep using the word recovery. Can you define for our audience what you're talking about? Because within the context of BTR, we help women who have been abused or have been in an abusive relationship with a man who uses pornography. And the listeners to this podcast and women who come to BTR for help, generally speaking, go down the pornography addiction recovery route with their marriage issues for a little while, way too long probably, before they're like, wait a minute, this isn't working. Some women do it for 5 years, some 10, some 20, some have 4 disclosures, 4 D-days, whatever. Then they make it to betrayal trauma recovery, where they say, he had been in recovery for a few years or 10 years or 7 or whatever it is. So can you talk about what this recovery is you're thinking about, just in case they haven't gone down the pornography addiction recovery route or the sex addiction recovery route?
Right. So to me, recovery in general terms is process of becoming healthy. The goal is you're now leading a life of integrity, healthy emotional coping skills. I've always felt like recovery is really nothing more than living a healthy life. When I've told men who struggle with addiction that, hey, recovery is not just now to get to point B, recovery is the rest of your life, because once you've got it down, it's really just healthy living. So why would we put a limit on healthy living? We want that for the rest of our lives. In more specific terms, what does that look like? Because anyone can say they're living a healthy life. I believe that for someone who is an addict, who's struggling with these compulsive behaviors and feels like he can't help it, I think certain things I look for in a healthy recovery, and that's counseling and accountability groups and real dedicated time each day to figuring out what a healthy life looks like. What are healthy coping skills? What do I do in place of this?
With your husband's, let's put recovery in quotes here, recovery, that's the same thing many women are looking for. Maybe a 12-step group, maybe they're going to therapy, whatever it is. Did anyone ever identify the problem as abuse?
Not in the beginning. My D-Day was in 2010. When I had my D-Day, I kind of stumbled across the term trauma, and not right away. I never stumbled across the word abuse early on. To be honest, it wasn't really until I was coaching with BTR that it became commonly spoken of. I can look back on my own situation now and definitely see a cycle of abuse and of addiction. I think my issue with that term early on was that there wasn't physical, you know, most people think abuse and they think physical or even verbal. My husband was always calm and quiet, and he was the one that he made me look abusive in comparison to an outsider who didn't know what was going on, because I was very expressive of my anger. Never physical, but I verbalized it, whereas he would maintain kind of silence. But I know the abusive nature of gaslighting, and there was a lot of that. In the end, there was no denying that he knew he was robbing me of my reality. At one point, I told him, at this point, if you are keeping secrets from me, knowing how damaging it is to our relationship and to me, this is abusive and cruel. And to continue to make that choice, I think, is abusive and cruel. But no, that lingo was not out there for me for a long time.
And I think that's what's hurting victims of abuse, is that they're going down this path, going for professional help, trying to get help, and they're digging in the wrong place. They're not, because they're not professionals, but the professionals are digging in the wrong place. That's a reference to Raiders of the Lost Ark for you kids of the 80s like me who watched it 10 million times. They're digging in the wrong place. I think it's really interesting that you just talked about benchmarks. So a lot of women, when their husband seems like he's interested in change, they're looking for benchmarks. And I recently did a video. It's floating around on Facebook. If you follow us on Facebook at Betrayal Trauma Recovery, it's our guide to boundaries. We have some graphics floating around on Facebook and Instagram. If you follow us there at Betrayal Trauma Recovery, one of them defines some safety terms. The first is a safety violation, which is something abusive that someone does that harms you. The second is the term benchmark, which means a common recovery marker, like you just defined, like going to therapy or attending a group or whatever. These are common benchmarks that women are looking for. And then they think, okay, he's in recovery because he's doing these benchmarks. I think it's interesting because a lot of the women that we talk to, the guys are doing those benchmarks. They're going to therapy. They're going to a recovery group. But because they're not honest with their therapist, they're also gaslighting their therapist. Many of them are just getting a big ego boost or like narcissistic supply from their therapist, and they're not improving at all. And similarly with their either 12-step group or their accountability group, they go there and they're like the hero and they're not telling them the truth. They're just getting more narcissistic supply there. We see that all the time. So I really want to warn women about benchmarks. They're fine. It's fine to tell someone, hey, I need to see these benchmarks. But what you really need to look for, rather than looking for benchmarks, is the actual safety behaviors that we talk about, like honesty, humility, accountability.
And that's what I meant in the beginning when I mentioned integrity. So to me, those benchmarks can be just checkboxes that get checked off and don't add up to anything. That there's no real change in the relationship at home and in the way women are treated. And so, yeah, I think the real proof in the pudding, so to speak, of recovery is abusive behaviors stop and you notice healthier behaviors take the place.
Now, a betrayal trauma recovery, we define recovery like physical therapy or someone recovering from an accident or an injury. It's not that they're sick or that they have some kind of like mental disorder or something, and so they need to recover like an addict does, but more the recovery from the frame of reference of you're injured and you're recovering from your injury. When we use the word betrayal trauma recovery in our context, we're talking about recovering from someone else harming you. So those are two different ways to use the word recovery, and people use them interchangeably. I just also wanted to make that clear. Now, you said one thing where you said if you're not willing sometime in the future to trust again, I agree with you. And then I also want to share that a lot of women aren't sure if they are willing to trust again, but what they're willing to do is leave the light on. They're willing to leave the door open just a little bit. Now, interestingly enough, a lot of victims, including me, I'm actually leaving the door open, right? A lot of victims are like, I wonder if he will ever be honest or accountable or humble or willing to genuinely submit to the consequences of his actions. And a lot of people interpret this waiting period of, I wonder if he'll ever be safe enough to interact with, as I'll still just go on as normal. A betrayal trauma recovery, we advise that during this waiting period, like, I wonder if he'll eventually be safe, we advise women to set boundaries. So you can have a no contact boundary and still be leaving the light on. We will continue this conversation with Coach Lara next week. If you're looking for a program for the man in your life who is exhibiting abusive behaviors, but you're looking for a program that approaches it from an abuse perspective, we recommend Center for Peace. It's cenfp.org. It's a year-long program, and there are only 11 spots available. So if you're interested, you need to make sure that you do that right away, because once those 11 spots are taken, they're gone. So act quickly. If this podcast is helpful to you, we really appreciate your support. To give monthly, go to btr.org, scroll down to the bottom, and click on Support the Podcast. Similarly, every one of your ratings on iTunes or your other podcasting apps, your comments on the website, any way that you can help us get the word out to other victims of betrayal, please help us out. Give us a rating on iTunes. Tag us on Facebook, link to some of our articles or podcasts on your social media. You just might be the answer to someone's prayer. And until next week, stay safe out there.